Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's the Growler with BD and Jay. Here to analyze for you today. From Growler Bed to Jay's Got Stats. We hope you enjoy this episode of the Growler Podcast.
All right, welcome in to the latest edition of PD&J on the Growler. Paul Daner Jr., The Athletic, Jay Morrison, Pro Football Network, here with you live on the YouTubers. You can see you here on YouTube. What's up, Jay?
Trying not to be nervous doing it live. I don't want to trip over my words. I do wonder, should we ask the Bengal boys for a new song when we do it live?
Oh,
I like that intro a lot, but when we do it live, maybe a different song.
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking something harder, a little more intense, a little bit more, you know, something 80s Hamilton County Fairgrounds is what you're thinking. Is that what you're thinking?
There's a lot of options there with those parameters. So, yeah, we could find something.
All right, Bengal boys, we know that you're listening. You've proven this. So if you can think of something that maybe would be good to do with a live experience, maybe. Let me know. I'm interested to see what it is. All right. Thanks, everybody that's watching. If you're listening, of course, hope you've been listening and subscribe to the YouTube page. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, as Jay and I are here with you every single week, along with Balls Don't Lie on Monday and Hootay Light on Friday with Mark Shalafoe here on the Growler. And Jay, I wanted this draft season. So like fully draft season now. I like the idea of let's take on a topic here and fully flesh it out each week as we go along. And before we dive into, you know, we have mock drafts out. Go read Jay's. You should be checking out the mock draft simulator, which we're going to use in a little bit over at Pro Football Network, which is fantastic. You can get all your friends together to hang out and mock together. Is that it's where we're at as a society, right?
Yeah, you got to fight over who gets to do the Bengals, though. Everybody has to pick a different team to be, but I'm sure you have friends that are fans of other teams, and it's a great new tool. It's almost like doing a fantasy draft, but you're doing it as a mock draft. Everybody jumps in, drafts for the team they're in charge of, and really gives you a new perspective on how it's going to play out.
Yeah, so we'll use a solo version of that tool in a little bit because we want to because we're going to talk about trades. We're going to talk about movement. First round movement, second round movement, T. Higgins movement in regards to what the best strategy is for this team and how it all lays out. They're in a really interesting spot. So we're going to do kind of a trade back look later and compare that to some of the normal mock drafts that you've seen us do that are sort of out there with the standard number of picks. I'll start here. The Bengals are just in a really interesting spot, Jay, because they're 18 is that cusp of the last few of the blue chips remaining, the true first round grades remaining, depending on your team, depending on how you view it. So those become valuable in their own right. Or maybe for one of those teams in the 16 to 20 range, they've run out for you. And you feel like now there's no difference between who you're picking now and 10 picks later. And we've discussed that a little bit here about how it could be a draft that's better for moving back a little bit. And there's a lot of teams in the back end of the first round that might be interested in coming and moving up and rounds 2 and 3 really could be a place where the Bengals could do a lot of really good work in this draft. So I just think that they don't do it a lot as far as any movement, but they've got more options this year and more intriguing ones when you throw in the looming cloud over Paycor Stadium of the T. Higgins trade request. They've got a lot of really intriguing options, I think, at their disposal if they'd be interested in it.
They do, and it seems, well, it doesn't seem, it's actually happening where there are a lot more trades on that first day of the draft than there typically are. Last year, there was 14 draft day trades on the first round. A lot of movement. The year before, 15. I don't know what started this, but 2021, there was six. 2020, there was seven. 2019, there was nine. It's just ramped up. Teams are much more eager, and maybe it's because there's a lot more trades going on before the draft and picks moving around, and they maybe regret getting to where they got, and they try to get up higher. But there's a lot of options there. I still, you throw history out sometimes when you talk about this team, the way they are doing things different now, but I still think a trade up feels like a long shot. It feels like if they are going to make a move, trade back is the way to go. But really, the way teams are bouncing around like crazy these last couple of years in the first round, I think you're going to see a lot of activity. And if something comes up, if there's a player there they really want, it wouldn't stun me to see them move up 2-3 spots to get someone that, like you said, maybe the last first round grade they have on somebody.
There's this video circulated yesterday with it was from last year. It was from the Arizona Cardinals behind the scenes of the draft content. And it was Monty Austin Fort working the phones. They had clipped together him working the phones in their first round where they moved back. Houston came up, and then they went back up for Paris Johnson. And it was like 5 minutes of it was something out of Wall Street, you know, of just like working it this angle, that angle. And it's just the young Wheeler Dealer GM is everywhere now. It's much more prevalent than it used to be. It used to be so much more of a sit and pick, which is who the Bengals have been. I mean, Jay, you're the trivia master and you're the stats master. So I don't need to tell you this. And any Bengals fan that isn't a newly acquired from the Burrow generation or has any longevity here doesn't need to be told this. The last time the Cincinnati Bengals moved up in the first round was Kajana Carter. Okay. 1995, 5-1, big splash. Tore his ACL in the preseason. That was that. And it feels like it was a scar that cut so deep for Mike Brown and company that they said never again. And it has been that way. It has been never again. They have never moved up since then. And in fact, they've only moved back a couple of times. They moved back in 2004 twice, from 17 to 24, then to 26. They passed on Steven Jackson.
Yeah,
for Chris Perry. For that, they received 117 and 123 overall for that movement. In 2012, they moved back from 21 to 27, passed on David DeCastro, and took Kevin Zeitler. They received 93 overall for that. In 2018, they made a trade before the draft in order to try to fix their offensive line. They acquired Cordy Glenn. They moved from 12 to 21. They acquired Cordy Glenn in a round 5 pick swap. That was a little different of a scenario, but still willingness to use that first round pick capital. But that's it. You know, we're talking 30 years almost here. That's really it. And so to think that they have any good chance to move, might make a move. You know, you said don't use history, but this is pretty strong history.
Yeah. I'll go back a couple years before the Kajana one. In 92, they traded down, and that was a one that I don't think it gets the attention that the Kajana one did. They went from 4 to 6. Washington took Desmond Howard at 4. The Bengals took David Klingler at 6. Now, I'm sure quarterback was on their mind all the whole time anyhow, but an important thing. It's an interesting thing to look at, because you look at the one you mentioned in 2012, trading back from 21 to 27. Yes, they passed on DeCastro. Zeitler was still a really good pick.
Yeah.
And the difference between Zeitler and DeCastro, and you get a third, well, that third was Brandon Thompson, and he never panned out. And so that's only half the the battle is acquiring these picks. You still have to make the right selections with them and make it pay off. And that is that, that you mentioned the Billy Price, Cordy Glenn one, but the 2012 Kevin Zeitler one, that's the last time they've traded in the first round on the actual day of the draft.
Yeah.
Going on 12 years.
Right. So let's set that as sort of the foundation of this conversation, right? Of don't go expecting craziness. That said, you have the T. Higgins thing sitting out there. Now, today we have Stephon Diggs traded from Buffalo. These are different situations. They're players at different points in their careers, different levels of disgruntled, different places as in team building. I mean, the Bills are hitting the restart a little bit on their go for it that they did over the last 2 years. And the Bengals are kind of doing one last go for it a little bit before they might have to hit a little bit of a restructure reset when money starts changing in the next couple of years. So the Bengals are kind of a little bit behind that. But that, you know, you still see Stephon Diggs go to Houston, and good for Houston, right? Like they, you get it. They have all the glory, all the embarrassment of riches that come with the franchise star rookie quarterback, rookie contract quarterback, right? That's what you can do. You can do things like this. They can take on the money, and the Bills move on and they'll get young at receiver. And that's part of their move. But you're talking about a 2025 two. So next year's two, and then you have a pick swap involved in this. You know, really, you some teams value the next year the same as this year, not money. And I think you can push that kind of down around in value. So let's call it a third, maybe a late two, early third. If we're talking about this year's draft, and you compare that with some of the other trades that we've seen, if we're trying to, how does this affect the Bengals? How does this affect T. Higgins? Right? Brian Burns was a franchise tag trade made by the Panthers, who got 39 and a 2025 fifth. And then we saw the Snead thing, which just Kansas City was just reeking of desperation. Like you could just see, it's like in cartoons when you see the stink coming up off of them, is the desperation which is coming off of them of just, we'll take whatever for Snead at this point. So it was a 2025 third and a pick swap late. So desperation kind of return. Somewhere in the middle there, there's nothing here suggesting they're getting a first round pick for T. Higgins, is my point. So if we're looking at where it's at now, if that's probably what they're going to want, if they would consider it. But again, they're not they don't want to do that. It would have to be a blown away return. Right. And there's nothing on the market right now. And this Diggs thing only cements that suggests that's showing up.
Right. And what you said was important too, where the level of discontent. I mean, the Bengals love everything about T. Higgins and they want him here. I think the Bills had gotten to the point where there wasn't much they loved about Stephon Diggs other than what he can actually do on the field, but they just got sick of him and maybe they were willing to take a little less. I mean, I don't know if there's a team out there that's going to give the Bengals a great offer for T. Higgins. We talked about that. This draft class is too good at receiver. Seems like every year we say that. All these guys coming out of the way the college game has gone, you're always going to have great prospects coming out. And the down the road element of it too. Do you want T. Higgins production in 2024 and then a third round pick, a comp pick in 2026? Or do you want that second round pick in 2025? And I don't know. I don't think they should trade T. Higgins. I don't think they will trade T. Higgins. And I don't think T. Higgins is going to become a Stephon Diggs type of player where he's going to make that kind of stink and overtly or covertly with the passive stuff that Stephon Diggs. I think you're going to see more of a Jonah Williams situation where requested a trade, wasn't granted. He's a good soldier, plays his ass off, has one of his best years.
I totally agree with you on this. I think that's 100% the way this will likely play out. There's someone asked, what would you do? You know, we get that a lot. What would you do? You know, if there's one thing I would do, because I am kind of on the record. I and I'm kind of the same mind that I think the Bengals are. I get the feeling the Bengals are, and that's what you said. I mean, show up, play it out, go for it, try to go win a ring. And that's a different, that's another side of this Bills conversation, you know. Yeah. Everybody's comfortable with this Bills reset if they just would have made good on their go for it the last 2 years, you know. Mm-hmm. But they didn't. They fell short in January. They didn't have enough. And so when that happens, it doesn't feel so good when you have to go back and hit the reset. But the one thing that I would do is when we start looking at how this draft is being viewed, and we know these three receivers are at the top are different than everyone else. The only way I'm trading T. Higgins is if I have an exciting answer immediately here. And so it would have to involve packaging T as ability to move up, because one of those three receivers, you know, is attainable now. And that way you don't have to give up draft capital, which is so important. And we know that they don't want to do. It's sort of the opposite of the Bills Cordy Glenn deal, wouldn't it be? You know, it's from 21 to 12 for Cordy Glenn and some late stuff. Like, okay, from 18 to 9 or 10 for T. Higgins to a team that would have interest in that. And because there's still lots of movement that can happen, and there's lots of teams that need receiver that and have money, you know, that could do it. Patriots, Cardinals, there's teams that could be looking at that as an answer. That's the only thing I would do, and that I think that they should be entertaining is, okay, if you can trade T. Higgins today and you end up with one of Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, or Marvin Harrison Jr., is that likely? No, but if they fall down to where they're in that late top 10 and T and whatever, that's something that's a little more bearable is enough to get you there. That's when I think you would do it and have, because now you have the answer here. You have a real, real dude right here as your answer for not having T. Higgins, and you have that sustainability of the next 5 years of that guy under control, and you can move forward. Outside of that, I don't see any way that anything sounds good to the Bengals involving trading T.
Yeah, and the reason the Bengals would do that is the reason other teams wouldn't do that, because if they want a receiver so bad, they're willing to get T. Higgins for $21.7 million, wouldn't they rather just take one of these top three for 4 years at a fraction of that? So yeah, I just don't see it pairing up where the outside interest and the Bengals interest coming together at any point in the situation. In this
exactly scenario. low percentage chance on that happen. And so I think that's the layout of the T thing, because we have to talk about that. I mean, it's going to hover over draft weekend, and there's other ways that it could possibly play out in their favor. You know, maybe there's another receiver that they love, right? And then maybe somebody else doesn't, you know. Ladd McConkey, who would be a perfect Bengals fit, inside, outside versatility, you know, super savvy, great hands, got yak. Like, you love everything about how he could be with Burrow. Let's say that's it. And boom, 33 sitting there. You got all day Friday. And you're like, do you do it? You can just make a T for 33 now, and you draft McConkey, and you go forward in the same vein. Is that worth it? There's other ways I think that maybe you could see something like that happening. But again, I think it feels a little unlikely. If we talk about what you'd have to do, let's look at some of the recent middle of the first round movement that we've seen and what that compensation has looked like. In last year, we saw Pittsburgh go up from 17 to 14, so three spots, and they gave up a fourth. So it doesn't sound like a lot, but I mean, you know, you gave up Charlie Jones. Duke Tobin would say you gave up Geno Atkins just now, as he often does. In 2022, New Orleans went up from 16 to 11, five spots, gave up a third and a fourth. Kansas City went up from 29 to 21 to get McDuffie. They gave up a third and a fourth. So moving up, adding a third and a fourth man, Duke Tobin loves the sound of that. If we start talking about the move back into the mid 20s, or package that together and make it more like a mid two or something like that. You love the sound of that. You can go back further. The Jets moved up from 23 to 14 to get Elijah Vera Tucker in 2021. They gave up 2 threes and a fourth. So again, mid round hauls for this type of stuff. And so I think that's enticing, and that's something that you could see Duke Tobin leaning into, could you not?
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, it sounds great when you look at the math of it, of how many spots you're moving back, and then how many picks you're acquiring. But it, as you said, it always with Duke, it always comes down to the player and not the number, and they would have to feel. I guess it would depend on how far back they were going, but they would have to feel really good about whatever that pot of players is that they're going to be missing out on, that one of them would still be available. That's why I don't know how far they'd be willing to go back. 4, 5, 6 picks. I don't know. You're obviously going to get a bigger haul the farther back you go, but that comes with a huge risk unless, as we've talked about, as you said earlier, you get to 18 and you're like, what's the difference between 18 and 30? What's the difference between 18 and 35? If you have all those guys kind of graded the same, then maybe it does make sense to do that. One of the ones on this mock draft simulator that I've run a lot of them just to see what kind of the options, because the computer will present you with trade options when you go on the clock. And one, every time I run a mock, this one comes up. And it's Miami wants to come up from 21 to 18 and give up their second round pick.
Do they really?
I think you take that. I mean, yes. Go back 3 spots to get a second round next year. Not a second round this year, second round next year.
Oh, okay.
But still, I mean, that's and it's always a little dicey when you're talking about future picks, because it's like, well, if Miami has a great year, that's a huge difference than if Miami has a bad year with that second round pick. It could be 40, it could be 64, who knows? But I just found that weird that pick came up over and over again on every time I did a mock, and it's just to go back 3 spots to get a second round pick next year. I think that almost feels like a no-brainer.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think outside of them sitting there staring at a list, you know, they got their board in front of them and their first round grade guys has one name left or two names left. Mm-hmm. I think that's as simple as it gets. I mean, you can sit here and talk about paths and strategy and value all we want. I think more than likely that's all it ever comes down to is tiers for them. I mean, is 1A, 1B, 1C, how many is left in 1B? How many will be there if will somebody from 1B be available to them at 21, at 22, at 23? And what does that compensation look like? And it's as simple as that, more than it is grand strategies about positions and paths and things like that. I know this, and I want us to get into doing the mock draft simulation here and talk through it a little bit. Because I think there's some interesting dynamics to what is available to them. And who, you know, every simulator is different, right? You use Pro Football mm-hmm. Focus, it's different than Pro Football Network. You use ESPNs. They all have very, especially when you get into that second, third, fourth, yeah. They're all over the place. It's really hard to pin down anything outside of the top 15 usually to kind of get a feel for what's going to happen. And so, even amongst the best of the best, we talk about Daniel Jeremiah or Dane Brugler, our guy, you know, they all these guys, it's you look at past history, once you get outside of that top 15, the results don't always match up. And so knowing that, I just feel like there's an interesting dynamic still where I have found myself seeing a really uncomfortable drop at receiver in round 2 to receiver in round 3, as deep as this group has been billed as. And when you really look at who they all are, and we're going to do that in future episode, don't worry, I've got many, many notes and excitement about doing the receiver episode. But the day two receiver concept is an important one here and something that people need to realize. Like, I can't stress this enough. It's happening. That's an important top priority. There's been a lot of pushback. Anytime we've talked about it, I've been really surprised that people haven't been more open about this. That's a major priority that's happening. Okay. So when you think about that, I just see a big difference from when you watch all those names go off and you sit there and look at what's sitting there. You know, the depth of this receiver class doesn't strike me as much at 80 as it does at 49. And so adding something in between there, if you could, I think could be a major asset to them accomplishing that goal, because there is depth that goes that far into the early third, you know, where Tank Dell went last year, where that you've seen some of these guys come from, the DK Metcalfs of the world that have come from that two, late two, early three. You can do damage. This class lends itself to that. But all the way back to 80, I don't know that it's necessarily making it there. So that, to me, that's a great spot to try to add. And not just receiver. You can see that similarly at some others. I think defensive tackle is that way in some ways too.
And they have 10 picks, and you can do that. You can get the more of the sure thing with a second round receiver, maybe even a first, and then take another stab. And one of those guys that you really, maybe you have valued higher than somebody else that you think can come up and be a great value pick and end up being a player for you. I thought it was interesting. You know, we talk about how it seems like every year there's more and more receivers coming out. Last year, it was 48% of the guys that had 1,000-yard seasons were first-round picks. Not rookies. They came into the league as first-round picks. That was the highest since 2015, when it was 52% of the guys. But on the other end of that, I don't know how to make sense of this, but there were five guys. There were 27,000-yard receivers last year. There were five that were drafted in the fourth round or later. That's the most since 2016. So it's almost like the middle class has shrunk. And I know there's more to being a receiver than just 1,000 yards, but it's a good way to look at it. And you're getting more and more reliant on that first round pedigree to get you a 1,000-yard receiver. But at the same time, people are hitting at the back end of these drafts. And so I just think that would make sense for the Bengals to really target the position early and then maybe throw another dart and try to get a guy fourth, fifth round. And, you know, your next Yoshi Boss or Charlie Jones, whatever it is, just keep stacking that room.
Yeah. I think the rise, you know, I think you'll continue to see the rise of these later picks, you know, making impacts, the Puka Nacuas, the Tank Dells, you know, on the field, Rashee Rice last year, where I just think the depth and the sheer quantity of them and how many good ones there are and how much it ends up being about system fit and quarterback,
yes,
ends up allowing, you know, more of those later guys to succeed. That said, I think, you know, the second round receiver pedigree here at Cincinnati, like, it's a leap year, Jay.
Yes.
The Olympic year, the election year. Duke takes the second round receiver. This is my weird, obscure trend that I am all about this year. It's the Duke Tobin Olympic year theory. So I'm here for it. And I think this is where you can pinpoint it to going. That said, I think that for me, when we talk about what's the ideal, like, that's what I'm gunning for. The late two, early three addition. So how do you, you know, where do you, what are you going to do? Where do you need to go? Are you going back? You know, Arizona has a million picks. Okay. And they're back there at 27. So maybe you're saying, Arizona, let's package something. Arizona we just talked about Monty Austin Fort in Arizona, wheeler dealer, right? Move around, up, down. They might move out of four and go to 13 and then come up to six and then go back to eight. Then they're going to package something else. They could have any number of picks at their disposal at that point. And maybe you're moving back from 18 to 27 for 66 at the top of the third. Okay. And that's a great spot to hit. And maybe you're getting something similar and you figure out however you make the math work for yourself. But something like that, I think, to me is the path that the Bengals should be entertaining if that's possible.
And we have visualization of that.
We do. So let's do it, right?
Yeah.
Let's give this thing a shot. So I want to talk about this, and I know you're listening. We're going to talk through it. It's the same for – you should be subscribed to our YouTube channel. We recommend you going, watching, following along. We have all this stuff up all the time, all our pods are up there. But this works for all our listeners too, of course, as well. I want to try to – let's see if we can make this happen smoothly live. Let's see here. Let's go. And let's bring in this here, Jay. So here's one we did before we started. And this was going further back, okay? We ended up going all the way back to 36 with Tampa Bay, which is like, okay, this is more – I think this is more than you'd be willing or wanting to do. But you can really become day two warriors, man. Like, 5 day 2 picks. You end up with 6 in the top 115, and you end up with 4 in the top 80. That's to me a great chance to check boxes for a team that can do that. We end up with Ladd McConkey at 36, a name that I've talked about that feels like a great fit. So you check the receiver box. Got Tavondre Sweat for the defensive tackle run stopper at 40. Got Patrick Paul from Houston at the original 49 as a tackle who can develop in the background, and you hope that he's ready if anything happens to either of your brown boys, your brown behemoths. At 80, they get a guard from Boston College, Christian Mahogany. Mike Sanistrill, still there at 97. Say that 3 times fast. Yeah. and so you check the cornerback box. Boxes checked everywhere. Great receiver fit. I mean, McConkey inside of Higgins and Chase. And with the versatility to move Chase inside more because McConkey can play outside as well. Like, love, love, love. And you checked so many boxes that way, even though you didn't take anybody in the first round. And I think there's an interesting trade-off to be talked about there with that. Although you hate not having anything on Thursday because, Jay, you and I don't have anything to write about except for I guess we'll just break down the trade as much as we can, but we'll get mad clicks on our best prospects available on day two story.
I was just going to say, if this happens, we should do like a tweet up, and because we'll be out early Thursday night, everybody can come join us and maybe have some drinks and talk about what they are going to do on day two. I found this was interesting too, because when we got to that fourth pick at 80, I was almost going to suggest Sandra Still. And yeah. It was a pleasant surprise to see, you know, going for the interior O-line, and then he's still there at 97. So this is, I don't know what the chances are they would trade that far back, but it's just an exercise to give you an idea of what that haul could look like. And yes, you've got the picks, but to me, this is very uncomfortable going with Patrick Paul. I just feel like they need to get a tackle earlier. Now, it's one thing if the top 5 or 6 go off the board before 18, but I think when we did this, there was still some of those top 5, top 6 tackles available when we made the trade back. So I maybe if there's a huge run on tackles and 6 of them are gone by the time 18, this would be something to entertain. But it's an interesting way to look at it, because that is – well, you had 6 guys in the top 115. That is a heck of a haul.
Plus, I believe there was another addition later. We're just stopping there. Yeah, I mean, that's your sacrifice, right? You're sacrificing the drop-off in your tackle prospect of the future from, you know, whoever it is, Mims or I don't think Fatanyu was available, but one of those guys of the ones we've talked a lot about, for somebody who makes you a little more uncomfortable. It's more developmental, but maybe you've got to count on that and hope that Trent Brown stays healthy. But in exchange for that discomfort, you have added Ladd McConkey and Tavondre Sweat. Okay. And so it's that extra player in that premium position. in the draft that you feel like is exchanged. So let's take that and let's pull that back for a second. And we're going to attempt to do another one where we trade back. And the one thing that we're not going to do is trade back out of round one. We've now shown you going way out and given you kind of an example of that. But let's not go all the way out. So we're gonna try to get this thing started here and bring it back up, and let's see what happens here.
Let's hope it doesn't make a liar of me. I want to see the Miami trade offer from 21 to 18.
That's what you want. So we'll see what it gives us here on the PFN NFL mock draft simulator. Let's see as we go and what fires off. So we're sitting here and we're now up at 18. Baltimore has offered us 30 for 62 and a 2025 third. On the board, by the way, at 18 currently, Mims and Latham, mm-hmm. Newton and Murphy. So horses here. Okay. Horses are here. The next offer is to go all the way out again, which we're not going to do. It would be Houston all the way back to all. That's intriguing. 42, 59, and 86. And a 2025 two from those Texans are getting wild these days.
That's
Jay,
right.
For 18 and 115. We're not going to do this. So let's take the Baltimore. Let's go back to 30. Okay. We're going to add that 62, which is that range, and remind you of 2025 third as well. Involved in this. So this is going to take us off of 18 all the way back to 30. And we'll see how we feel about that. How do you feel about this, Jay?
Kind of the same. It's a nice haul, but I don't think Mims and Latham are going to fall. So then you're back in that same position where you're getting a little uncomfortable with who you're going to take as that tackle.
Yeah. You're hoping for something fun, and you're in that next tier three is what you're kind of saying. So let's accept, see what happens. Oh, all those names went off very quick and none of them were great. Oh, adding 131. We're not even getting to 131 here, so we're going to reject the Chiefs. There's people who are of interest in our pick 30 here. So the Chiefs want to come up a couple of spots. The Jets are trying to make a crazy offer.
72.
We're not going back to 72. 36, we already did that one. So we're going to reject. It's time for us to pick, Jay. We're going to pick. So here's what we got in front of us. Tyler Guyton is here. Okay? He's kind of in that. He's the massive tackle. Right. Mm-hmm. We know he's a fit in that respect. So you can hit the tackle spot at tackle. Guyton, Jordan Morgan. And then those are the two of the tackles that you would go into. You've got Keon Coleman, A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, McConkey are all here from the receiver perspective. Do you feel like going for the tackle here? Because that's what you kind of wanted to do anyway. Guyton's a profile fit in terms of size, and he's not one of the top, but you probably feel okay with him. Would you want to just go with Guyton here?
Yeah, I think I'm tempted to go with Sweat, but it's still a little too early. Yes, just
still a little tad.
Not sure he'll be there, but I do. I think Guyton would be the pick here. I don't want to take Xavier Worthy. Okay, I don't want to scar Bengals fans taking a wide receiver who broke the 40-yard dash.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with Xavier. I'm not comfortable with those. I'm not comfortable with the Texas receivers here. No. So let's go with Guyton. This is an interesting spot. You end up with some different names. So drafting him, and now you end up here at 49. Okay, Carolina's offering a move back all the way to 65. You'd add 101, so you'd be adding another pick at the end of the third there. I don't know how much I like that. On the board,
I see Sweat.
Your boy made it. Okay.
Not trading.
Aroro is here. Zach Frazier from West Virginia, the potential center of the future in your interior offensive line. O-line is available to you. Okay. There's a few others here, but I'm going to reject this trade, and we're just going to pick. Oh, let's see what the second one. There's another one. Yeah. 51, just two spots, but we're adding a late pick. It doesn't really mean anything.
Too big of a risk.
So we're going to reject is what we're going to do. Okay, let's go here. And you want to take Sweat?
Yeah, I think
is that what you're feeling, or do you want to go with Michael Hall Jr.? Do you have a preference?
I think he could double up. I think he could maybe get Michael
you're
Hall.
Thinking
the next
maybe
pick?
He's around.
Yeah,
right. Because you've got, don't forget, 62 is coming. Yeah. But I'm plotting 62 for a receiver right now. So let's go Sweat. Let's check boxes here. So Sweat comes off the board, and now you have 62. Off. And this is a really interesting spot. Aroro made it down there, by the way. So you've got another offer on the board from Denver to take to move back to 76. We don't want to move back, and we don't want to move back with the Jets. Jets are trying to offer us everything in the future. They're like, Aaron Rodgers is gone. We'll give you a bunch of future stuff. So at receiver here, let's take a look at the receivers that you have left: Leggett, Roman Wilson, Jalen McMillan, Tez Walker, Johnny Wilson, Jermaine Burton. I like the group here. I like Roman Wilson. I like Jalen McMillan. I think either one of those guys is probably starting for you week one. I'm a Wilson guy, as people will learn. I think he's a great fit. I love him off script because he just feels like he'll mesh really well with Burrow and how good he is at working with the quarterback off script. We know that's huge. So I get my pick here. You had your guy. I'm going with Roman Wilson, so I get the receiver here at 70. Take that, and then we fast forward here to the end, and now we're here at 80. And this is kind of a familiar place where we've seen a lot of these mocks go. I'm not going to try to add any more picks. And so now you're here at this spot, and there's a bunch of receivers. Let's go back to all. And your boy Aroro somehow has made it all the way back down to 80, Jay. What's going on in the simulator?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what, 48?
Double up, right?
You can, yeah.
This feels like a double up. And that's the great the end of the third for the Bengals here. If something crazy like this would happen, I mean, you'd be making calls. It reminds me of the Andrew Billings pick. You remember that? People had him as a first rounder, and then you're getting there, and it's crossing over day two to day three. And what's wrong with Andrew Billings? And they kind of were calling in, checking on some stuff. What's going on here? Said he checks out, and he did check out. And he's had to put a nice career together. It wasn't the greatest thing that ever happened here, but you say, you know what? There he is. You can take advantage of that because you have the extra comp pick at 97 for Bates. So
yeah,
why not? You could easily go one of the other positions of need. You could look at a corner. You could do a tackle double up if you wanted to. I think you're looking hard at interior offensive line here as well. There's a lot of these are kind of wide open for a bunch of different options, but the fact that he's here, I think you just take it, right?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So now you've got that and you're sitting here at 97, more bad trade offers and you're kind of wide open again. Now you've got corner.
Sandersill's still there.
I think you can go ahead and hit that and say, hey, what's up, future Mike Hilton? Yep. Take it again, just like we did in the last one. Draft him right there. And this is our 115. I guess I went to the fourth round again. Mm-hmm. What do you want to do here? Kalen King from cornerback from Penn State, right? Hit the cornerback button.
Double up again. What's
We don't have to do that.
Yeah.
We could go to running back. If you want to get crazy, you could go to any of these positions here. Defensive tackle, again, whatever. If you're looking for somewhere to go here, let's just say
McCormick, go interior O-line.
Yeah, interior O-line, South Dakota State. Keep these Dakota boys together.
That's right.
Right? Pair them up with Volson. And finish it off with your interior line pick right there. So that leaves you here with Baltimore's third next year. Guyton, Sweat, Wilson, Aroro, Sandersill, and McCormick. Love it. Six in the top 115.
Yeah.
Again, four in the top 80. You take advantage of day two. You don't have your star at the top. You're giving that up for your drop to Guyton. That's interesting to put against what you've been seeing because Jay, I just don't know that you can check all the boxes you truly want to just sitting on these picks. And remember, they have ability to move up using some of the later picks that they have a bunch of in round 6 and 7 to maybe help them with a little push forward on names they might be targeting in round 4 or 5.
Be interesting. I don't want to do it right now just off the fly, but maybe that can be a future growler bet, is net movement. Picks up versus picks down. What does this draft look like? You know, are they going to make one trade back for 10 spots, one trade back for 4 spots, multiple trades? I would be surprised to see them make every pick that they currently have. There's going to be – it's just teams are trading too much anymore. Like you said, the young guys wheeling and dealing. And there's just – I like both of these hauls. There is that discomfort with where you go at tackle. But having Trent Brown in the fold eases that a little bit. I think both of these trade back exercises we did make a lot of sense.
They do. They really do. The other thing to remember, Bengals' number one trade movement play, their premium power play, is the move back in round 2.
Yep.
That's what they like to do. Now, they're a little further back than when they've done it traditionally in recent years, and let's run down that for you real quick. Of course, the only time that Duke Tobin has moved up in rounds 1 or 2 came back a couple of years ago when he moved up a grand total of 3 spots to make sure that he got Cam Taylor-Britt, which shows you what he thought about Cam Taylor-Britt, that he was willing to do something he'd never done before. Because it was always about move back. Back 8 spots in 2021, the Carmen pick, they got 122 and 139, so adding a couple of fours. In 2019, they moved back 10 spots from 42 to 52, and they got a fourth and then another later pick. That was the Drew Sample move. In 2018, they moved back 8 spots from 46 to 54, took Jesse Bates, and they used that to move up from 100 to 78, which was the Sam Hubbard,
Malik Jefferson
corollary of you never know what your draft's going to give.
Yeah.
Back-to-back spots. And then in 2017, they moved back 7 spots from 41 to 48 for Mixon, and they got 128. Adding a pick on in that fourth round, which could be things that we know that they like to do there. They're going to be looking for interior offensive line depth. They're going to be looking for running back, tight end, maybe another wide receiver. That's when those positions come more into play. And maybe or a potential double up, if they feel like the ability to move back can give them that, they will do that. I mean, that is a top thing that they'll be eyeing here when they are on the clock at 49 is, can we get the same guy if they're eyeing a receiver? And it's, you know, maybe that's what I was talking about with the receiver draft. Like, man, we love 5 of these guys. Move back 7 spots, add the fourth. That is Duke Tobin fingerprint 100%.
I mean, it's exactly what they did in 17. They traded with Minnesota, right? So Minnesota comes up to 41. It takes Dalvin Cook, and then the Bengals get Mixon. And you look at those back-to-back years, Mixon and Jesse Bates, they trade back, and they still get – I don't have the list in front of me of who they missed on, but they still get fundamental building blocks of the team by moving back, and then you add those extra picks. What do you think? You think they're more likely to trade back in the first round or the second round?
I think the second, just because I just think they are more likely to just sit. I think in the first round, they're more likely to just sit, like who fell to them. I think somebody that they like will fall to them.
One of them.
And they'll take it. I think taking one of these tackles is just it's too comfortable.
Yeah.
It's too easy, right? And to where I just think it's just too easy for them to just hit the button rather than getting tricky. And so for that sake, I think there. But in round 2, and we've seen that with all teams.
Yeah.
Ton of movement in round 2 and the Bengals amongst those. And I could see them moving back, having a lot of similar type of guys and wanting to, you know, add another fourth round pick or give them more capital to maybe move back into the third or move around there to pinpoint their exact targets when we get into that. All right. So we've kind of touched on a lot of this stuff right now. Let's talk a little bit about run passer boot of what we think. This is our official run passer boot. First 2 days, up or none. So they will trade up or they will not trade at all. Down or trade Higgins. Run, pass, boot.
I gotta run down. I mean, it just makes too much sense. They have a history of doing it. The question here is what's the boot? Because none feels like it's in play, but up feels remote and trading T feels even more remote. So I guess because I'm getting the twofer where it's none or up, I'll pass on that one and then I'll boot T. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I'll do the same. I'll boot T. And I'll run with down. I think the fact that they have that number 97 now makes them much more likely to deal. Whereas I would say I would lean into none if not for that. I just think with all the late picks and having 97, I think there's a better chance of some movement from them happening late in day two, potentially. And obviously we just discussed their second round history of that being a possibility. So I'm with you. I'll run with down and I'll pass on up none and boot Higgins. Jay, is there any angles of draft movement that we have not talked through yet so people can feel like they understand it?
No. I mean, we even touched on the highly unlikely one of trading up 8 or 9 spots to get a receiver in the top 10. I think we've got it covered, all the scenarios. I like that 97 pick is maybe dealing that with a late one of those later picks to come up a few spots in the third round if there's a guy they like there. I think you're going to see it. It's Duke's not a young wheeler dealer, but I think you're going to see some wheeling and dealing happen.
A little bit, yeah. And the other part to remember about this, you know, with NIL and COVID years and all the stuff that's going on, the late rounds are not as strong. That's kind of been a consensus from a lot of people, is that round 6 and 7, you know, aren't going to be necessarily yielding you what you like to get out of round 6 and 7. And the Bengals have 4 of those things. So if there were teams that would find that enticing to take those on, and you could use them to assure you get what you want earlier in the draft in any respect, even if it's a little bit of a move on round 3, I think you should be more than willing, specifically for a team that has 4 of those, to make moves and maybe use those to get out from under some of those 6th and 7th round picks. All right. We have covered draft movement. We should update the growler game, Jay. We need to update where we're at because we had a name off the board.
Yes, you are on the verge of clinching. Clyde Edwards-Helaire back to the Chiefs. So he was one of mine. Now I have I hit on Trent Brown, but I missed on Jordan Whitehead, Daquan Jones, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. All I have left in an attempt to tie you is if J.K. Dobbins ends up a Bengal. You hit 2-pointer with Geno Stone. You hit with Zach Moss. You still have T.R. Tartt and Mekhi Becton. I don't think either one of those are going to happen, but you still have 2 guys out there as possibilities. So score remains 3-2. Your magic number is down to 1.
Feels good. Feels good. By the way, for those screaming for Tartt and Becton or wondering what, still out there.
Yeah.
Still out there. I think those are guys that could be sitting there for a little while and potentially be an option down the line. All right. So it's good to feel good there. Outside of that, we got some Arby's to wrap us up, Jay. I have a quick one that just popped up right quickly before we came on that made me laugh. And that was producer of the Dan Patrick Show, Paul Pabst, happened to be on NFL Network, is re-airing the 2021 Super Bowl, the 2021 season Super Bowl, Bengals Rams, for those of you familiar with it, and just out of nowhere dropped a comment about how bad the call was on Logan Wilson at the end. I'm like, imagine being a Bengals fan, having a nice little Wednesday, like survived the tornado, and you're just feeling good, you didn't get any flooding in your house, ready to just have a nice fun weekend, and it just get the just knife in the back out of absolutely nowhere. Just, it felt unnecessary and personal of somebody coming up and be like, hey, that might have been a bad call. Bengals fans screaming from the mountaintops, we know.
That's it. Does it make you feel better that that another person is pointing out that that was a bad call, or does it upset you that it's been brought up again? You've already buried it. I don't know you'll ever forget about it, but you put it behind you, and now, like as you said, the Band-Aid's ripped off, and now it's raw again.
Yeah, it feels unnecessary. I don't think it makes you feel good. I don't think it matters. No one's going to care. Yeah. No one's going to take away the video running on repeat of Aaron Donald pointing to his finger. Like, that's not going away. Okay. So no, it's not going anywhere. Do you have any Arby's to wrap us up from this past week?
Well, as a former mullet sporter, I was amused by the one of these two truths and a lie post from the Bengals social media where they photoshopped a mullet on Joe Burrow. It was amusing. I don't know where what the idea was behind it. He, in that picture, he looks like somebody, and I can't place it. It looks like another famous mullet person, and I cannot think of who it is, but it really amused me. And then the other thing, sticking with Bengals Twitter, I thought it was really cool how many of the guys were weighing in on the Caitlin Clark game. I mean, no surprise, 12.3 million people watched that game. It was the most watched women's game. But it's cool to see professional male athletes getting into the women's basketball game and not just watching it, but tweeting about it and engaging. And I watched it. I watched it on my TV while I had the Reds on my phone. That my priorities were with that game. There was just, it was a good game, and there was the possibility of fireworks. It was just, it had everything you want a sporting event.
You know what makes it great? Like, we just love trash talk and it mattering. Yeah. Like, Angel Reese dropping the crown on the chair before, like, that's what, that made me be like, I was gonna watch, but now I'm like, I'm not missing a minute. I am here for all of this. You know, just, I love it. I love how the women's game is different from the men's game. I love that people are into it. I love the stars. I love everything about it. It's been so much fun to watch, and I can't wait to watch Iowa and UConn play. This is going to be awesome. You know, you get Paige Buckets, you get Caitlin Clark going at it. You get the UConn underdog UConn and Gino Auriemma, right? And so it's fun. It's been super fun to watch. I've definitely enjoyed the tournament. No, that's a great one there. All right, that will wrap us up. Thanks to everybody for checking out. And don't say you don't know the history or understand the Bengals' ability to move around on draft day, okay? We have filled an hour.
No excuse.
Strictly covering that topic. But don't worry. Much, much deeper into players, positions, and approaches as we head forward. We're getting closer now, Jay. I mean, look, it's April 3rd. We only have how many more of these? One, two, three more shows for us until the draft actually happens. That's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure.
It's two more, isn't it? It'll
the
be
draft
the,
is the 25th. So we have the 10th,
the 17th, and the 24th.
24th.
Yes, you're right.
Come on, Fairfield. Let's go. All right, Jay. Appreciate it. I will talk to you. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. Follow on YouTube and all your preferred podcast platforms. Talk to you.